Last Monday, I drove down to Boston for a meeting of the Congregational Library and Archives, on whose board I sit. And I was impressed, as I have been many times in the past, as I approached the city and noticed how Boston is changing. New buildings are going up, and there are cranes everywhere, and old buildings have been replaced or reconfigured, and the city never seems to stop changing. Even places that have stayed constant over the years, like the Paramount on Charles Street, on Beacon Hill, where I lived a long time ago, has changed owners. And the Greek siblings who used to own the place are gone. And it used to be a pretty homey, rundown kind of place. And you could get breakfast for $3.25. And people like Kevin White, the former mayor of Boston, used to come in. And now it's, well, it's a bit swishy. And everything's shiny a little bit. And the prices have gone up. And you can still get a good breakfast, but it's not the way it used to be. Now, I don't know about you, but I am prone, as I get older, to bouts of nostalgia. And I'd like to think, well, things were better back in the day. And yet, I remember when I was a kid, we had the Vietnam War going on. We had Watergate unfolding. Times Square was not a place you felt safe in during the day. And I used to go into New York a lot as a kid. Have you ever felt that the past was a golden age? You just had that sense? You wanted to be there? You wanted to come back and be a reality? Well, if you have had that feeling, you are not alone. You would not be the first people in the history of humanity to feel that way. Indeed, on August 29th, 520 BC, we can date the story from this morning's lesson. A bunch of people in Jerusalem needed to hear a message. You may remember that the people of Judah had been sent into exile by the Babylonians, who had conquered the country and destroyed the city, including the temple, in 586. Well, the Babylonians had their moment in the sun, and then the Persians came and knocked them off the top of the heap. And Cyrus had declared that the people of lands that the Babylonians had conquered could return back to their homelands. And he gave permission for the Jews to return to Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. And there must have been a lot of excitement at that moment. They were going to have a temple again. They were going to have their own country again. And they looked at, you can imagine looking at the architect's renderings. You've seen those, right? Of buildings that are going to be put up and everything looks great. And then someone comes along and says, you know, we actually have to build this now. And it's going to take a lot of money to do that. And a lot of hard work. So the people who'd returned to Judah did what people do most of the time. They turned away and they went and they focused on their own priorities. They rebuilt their own homes. And Haggai, who was a prophet for just a short period of time, saw what was going on, and God spoke with him. And he thought, this will not do. Rather than build the temple that we need, people are living with visions of the temple that was. They're living in the past. And so the message came to Haggai, and it came to Zerubbabel, and it came to Joshua, the governor who is a descendant of the last king of Judah and the high priest. Get everybody together, and we're going to have a talk. And in a sense, this was a, we're going to have a come to Jesus talk. Of course, Jesus did not exist at that point. But they needed to be slapped upside the head. So Amy read the lesson with a lovely church voice. And I appreciate her ability to pronounce the names. But that lovely voice, I think, missed some of the sarcasm and some of the snark that Haggai would have used as he was talking to the people. Who is left among you that saw this house in its former glory? Who? 66 years had passed since the temple in Jerusalem had been razed. And the average lifespan at that point in time was somewhere between 40 and 50 years. We know that people did live to great age back in biblical times, but most did not. So the odds of anybody being present who'd actually seen the old temple were vanishingly slim. So they were remembering something they'd never seen. And they thought, well, the work they were doing didn't compare to this imaginary vision. How does it look to you now? Is it not in your sight as nothing? So Haggai's brought them low. And he's probably got them feeling a little bit depressed. But then the good news comes. Now, to understand this good news, you need to remember that back then, people believed that the Spirit of God was actually present in the temple. And as time passed, people began to take that notion and began to think that God needed that temple to be present. And there had been a long tradition of temples and tabernacles and the ark in Israel and Judah. And people remembered that. But they seem to have forgotten that God did not need a house to free the slaves, to bring the children of Israel out into freedom. And they didn't seem to remember that God didn't have a house when he established a covenant with Abraham and renewed it with Isaac and with Jacob. And he says right here, in simple language, God is with you, all of you. God is not living in a house somewhere. He doesn't need a condo. God is amidst the people. Now think about that. God is with you. God is with us right here. Don't spend all your time living in the past. Instead, look to the future. If you think about the story of Israel and you think about Christianity, these are faith traditions that are firmly geared towards the future, to what is going to come, to God's promises being fulfilled. Think about the central premise of our Christian faith. We talk about Jesus having been crucified, died, and risen. And we anticipate his coming again in glory. That's the future. That's what we should be looking towards. Now, nostalgia is a fine thing in limited quantities. But we as a people of faith can't live in the past. We can't do it. It's gone. It may have effects on us. It may linger with us, but it is over. Really. The Golden Age is not some imagined event in the past. The Golden Age is now. My son Chip is 13 years old, and it's been a lot of fun to watch him grow up, especially with this cornucopia of sports championships we've had over the last couple of decades. And like any overbearing father, I remind him frequently that he should enjoy it while it lasts. This is the golden age of Boston sports. And this is just all he knows. But me, and most of you, well, you remember what it was like before. You remember when the Celtics used to win a lot? That was back in the 70s and 80s. It's gone. And who among us was alive when the Red Sox last won a World Series in the 20th century? But we found out that a new golden age could take place. The golden age is not meant to be a memory of something that may or may not have happened. The golden age is supposed to be a future we anticipate. And it can be the moment we live in, because this is the hour we have been given by God. Think about that. We can all build the world we want. And perhaps it's not the whole world, but it can be our own corner of it. A number of years ago, we changed the format of our bulletin, which used to have a picture of the church on the cover. And many churches put pictures of their building on the cover. And I wondered about that. What does it say to someone who comes in the door and actually thinks about this? Are we being like those ancient Jews? Are we worshiping the building? That's not what we're here for. It's great to take care of the building, but what's important is what happens in here. The worship and the concerts and the WIC clinics and the community dinners. The children's community corner downstairs. That's the golden age. It's not going to be perfect, but it can be grace-filled and it can be blessed. And I thank God that I am here with you at this time as we build into this future.